Epigraph. There's nothing left of what she was. Back to the babe the woman dies, and all the wisdom that she has is to love him for being wise. Coventry Patmore, The Angel in the House, 1891. Chapter 1. The Bereaved. Sussex, 1881. The point is, said my brother Michael, Helena can't possibly manage the estate now that Justin's dead, and this house is far too large for a widow with no children. He put his teacup down on the ornate marble mantelpiece, shoving a Dresden shepherdess to the side. The porcelain figurine wobbled dangerously. Michael shot out a steadying hand, glaring at the offending piece for getting in his way. Julia, Michael's wife, rose from her perch on a gilded bergère by the crackling fire. She retrieved Michael's cup and set the figurine back in its proper place. "Really, Michael, this is hardly the time to browbeat poor Helena. She's been a widow for precisely 9 days. Was there a crowd for the burial, by the way? I really don't see why we women should be excluded from such affairs." My glance met Julia's as she passed me, cup in hand, and I could see the sympathy in her eyes. I swallowed back a threatening tear. 9 days was certainly not enough time to adjust to the death of a beloved husband. I bent down to put a hand on my terrier, Scotty, who was lying at my feet with his head on his paws. The movement allowed me to dab surreptitiously at the corners of my eyes with the handkerchief I held crumpled in my palm. "The gentry turned out in force, as I'd have expected." Michael fidgeted with his watch chain. "It was a decent enough show. Julia, I wish you'd pour me more tea." "I'm sure you did a splendid job as head of the family, darling." Julia, who had anticipated Michael's request, handed her husband a fresh cup of tea, smiling up into his eyes. Poor Julia. Michael was tall, handsome, and well-built, with the thick shock of corn-blonde hair and brilliant blue eyes that distinguished the Scott de Quincey's. Well, most of them. At 23, he carried his position as the Earl of Broadmere and head of the Scott de Quincey family well. Or at least well enough that people generally overlooked his lack of social graces, kindness, and empathy. Perhaps I alone noticed the slight downturn in the corners of Julia's mouth as Michael took the cup from her without a word. "Ned helped with the formalities." Michael waved a hand at where Sir Edward Freestone, our brother-in-law and senior by a good 30 years, dozed in one of the larger armchairs by the fire. He'd forgotten to take off the decorative chain, donned for the funeral, that proclaimed his status as mayor of Littlebury. It was slipping to one side, its heavy gold links reflecting red flickers of flame as Ned's chest rose and fell. "And Thomas made himself useful, of course." Our sister Geraldine, Lady Geraldine Freestone, sniffed delicately at the mention of her eldest son's name, and her lips tightened. Thomas had been a chief mourner at Justin's funeral by my insistence. Jerry clearly disapproved, but just as clearly felt she should indulge my wishes as a young widow. So she refrained from speaking, communicating her scorn for her son by a straightening of her back and the angle of her blonde head. Thomas, always sensitive to his parents' feelings, had taken himself off to the nursery to amuse his nephews and small cousins. I listened to Michael's terse, factual description of my husband's funeral with half an ear, staring down at my dull black bombazine skirts. If only there weren't quite so many people in the room. As the sixth daughter, I'd spent my youth surrounded by other people. But since my marriage to Justin, I'd grown accustomed to the peace and spaciousness of Whitcombe House. Our world had revolved around the two of us, and we'd been happy. For me, that happiness had been all the more precious since I'd already lost one love, my cousin Daniel. And now my darling Justin had followed him to the grave. I forced out a small cough to dispel the painful lump threatening to form in my throat. Seeking distraction, I twisted a little in my seat to look out of the tall windows to the sea. The English Channel showed on the distant horizon as a band of